Freedom and Virtue Institute presents Readings in the Freedom and Virtue Tradition, hosted by Director of Research, Kevin Schmiesing.
The Greek philosopher Aristotle, 384 to 322 BC, is one of the most influential thinkers in world history. A student of Plato and the tutor of Alexander the Great, Aristotle wrote dozens of important works in a wide range of fields, including metaphysics, politics, aesthetics, and natural science. The work I will be reading from here is his Nicomachean Ethics, which has shaped Western civilization's moral universe ever since its appearance. It should go without saying that one of the key concepts in the freedom and virtue tradition is virtue, and Aristotle laid the foundation for virtue ethics, which would be built upon to good effect by medieval Christian thinkers, such as our previous FVT feature, Thomas Aquinas. I will be presenting excerpts from books 3 and 4, where Aristotle describes virtue in general as well as some specific virtues. These include two traits that the Christian tradition would come to define as the cardinal virtues, temperance and fortitude, here called courage, as well as liberality and good temper. Regarding the other two cardinal virtues, Aristotle treats what he calls practical wisdom, which Aquinas would adopt as prudence, later in the Ethics in Book 6. The fourth, justice, to which Aristotle devotes Book 5, will be articulated in a second part of this episode to be released later. Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, 350 BC, translated by W.D. Ross, as presented at the Internet Classics Archive. Book 3. The end, then, being what we wish for, the means what we deliberate about and choose, actions concerning means must be according to choice and voluntary. Now the exercise of the virtues is concerned with means. Therefore, virtue also is in our own power, and so too vice. For where it is in our power to act, it is also in our power not to act, and vice versa. So that if to act, where this is noble, is in our power, not to act, which will be base, will also be in our power. And if not to act, where this is noble, is in our power, to act, which will be base, will also be in our power. Now, if it is in our power to do noble or base acts, and likewise in our power not to do them, and this was what being good or bad meant, then it is in our power to be virtuous or vicious. The saying that no one is voluntarily wicked, nor involuntarily happy, seems to be partly false and partly true, for no one is involuntarily happy, but wickedness is voluntary. Or else we shall have to dispute what has just been said, at any rate, and deny that man is a moving principle or begetter of his actions, as of children. But if these facts are evident, and we cannot refer actions to moving principles other than those in ourselves, the acts whose moving principles are in us must themselves also be in our power and voluntary. But perhaps a man is the kind of man not to take care. Still, they are themselves by their slack lives responsible for becoming men of that kind. And men make themselves responsible for being unjust or self-indulgent, in the one case by cheating, and in the other by spending their time in drinking bouts and the like. For it is activities exercised on particular objects that make the corresponding character. This is plain from the case of people training for any contest or action. They practice the activity the whole time. Now, not to know that it is from the exercise of activities on particular objects that states of character are produced is the mark of a thoroughly senseless person. Again, it is irrational to suppose that a man who acts unjustly does not wish to be unjust, or a man who acts self-indulgently to be self-indulgent. But if without being ignorant a man does the things which will make him unjust, he will be unjust voluntarily. Yet it does not follow that if he wishes he will cease to be unjust and will be just. For neither does the man who is ill become well on those terms. We may suppose a case in which he is ill voluntarily, through living incontinently and disobeying his doctors. In that case, it was then open to him not to be ill, but not now, when he has thrown away his chance, just as when you have let a stone go, it is too late to recover it, but yet it was in your power to throw it, since the moving principle was in you. So too, to the unjust and to the self-indulgent man, it was open at the beginning not to become men of this kind, and so they are unjust and self-indulgent voluntarily. But now that they have become so, it is not possible for them not to be so. With regard to the virtues in general, we have stated their genus in outline, namely, that they are means, and that they are states of character, and that they tend by their own nature to the doing of the acts by which they are produced, and that they are in our power, and voluntary, and act as the right rule prescribes. But actions and states of character are not voluntary in the same way, for we are masters of our actions from the beginning right to the end, if we know the particular facts. But though we control the beginning of our states of character, the gradual progress is not obvious any more than it is in illnesses. Because it was in our power, however, to act in this way or not in this way, therefore the states are voluntary. Let us take up the several virtues, however, and say which they are and what sorts of things they are concerned with, and how they are concerned with them. And first, let us speak of courage. That it is a mean with regard to feelings of fear and confidence has already been made evident, and plainly the things we fear are terrible things, and these are, to speak without qualification, evils, for which reason people even define fear as expectation of evil. Now we fear all evils, for example, disgrace, poverty, disease, friendlessness, death, but the brave man is not thought to be concerned with all, for to fear some things is even right and noble, and it is base not to fear them, for example, disgrace. He who fears this is good and modest, and he who does not is shameless. He is, however, by some people called brave by a transference of the word to a new meaning, for he has in him something which is like the brave man, since the brave man also is a fearless person. Poverty and disease we perhaps ought not to fear, nor in general the things that do not proceed from vice and are not due to a man himself. But not even the man who is fearless of these is brave. Yet we apply the word to him also in virtue of a similarity, for some who in the dangers of war are cowards are liberal, and are confident in face of the loss of money. Nor is a man a coward if he fears insult to his wife and children, or envy, or anything of the kind. Nor brave if he is confident when he is about to be flogged. With what sort of terrible things, then, is the brave man concerned? Surely with the greatest, for no one is more likely than he to stand his ground against what is awe-inspiring. Now death is the most terrible of all things, for it is the end, and nothing is thought to be any longer, either good or bad, for the dead. But the brave man would not seem to be concerned even with death in all circumstances, for example at sea or in disease. In what circumstances, then? Surely in the noblest. Now such deaths are those in battle, for these take place in the greatest and noblest danger, and these are correspondingly honored in city-states and at the courts of monarchs. Properly, then, he will be called brave who is fearless in face of a noble death, and of all emergencies that involve death, and the emergencies of war are in the highest degree of this kind. What is terrible is not the same for all men, but we say that there are things terrible even beyond human strength. These, then, are terrible to everyone, at least to every sensible man. But the terrible things that are not beyond human strength differ in magnitude and degree, and so too do the things that inspire confidence. Now the brave man is as dauntless as man may be. Therefore, while he will fear even the things that are not beyond human strength, he will face them as he ought and as the rule directs, for honor's sake, for this is the end of virtue. But it is possible to fear these more or less, and again to fear things that are not terrible as if they were. Of the faults that are committed, one consists in fearing what one should not, another in fearing as we should not, another in fearing when we should not, and so on. And so too with respect to the things that inspire confidence. The man then who faces and who fears the right things and from the right motive, in the right way and from the right time, and who feels confidence under the corresponding conditions, is brave. For the brave man feels and acts according to the merits of the case and in whatever way the rule directs. Now the end of every activity is conformity to the corresponding state of character. This is true, therefore, of the brave man as well as of others. But courage is noble. Therefore the end also is noble, for each thing is defined by its end. Therefore it is for a noble end that the brave man endures and acts as courage directs. Of those who go to excess, he who exceeds in fearlessness has no name. We have said previously that many states of character have no names. But he would be a sort of madman or insensible person if he feared nothing, neither earthquakes nor the waves, while the man who exceeds in confidence about what really is terrible is rash. The rash man, however, is also thought to be boastful and only a pretender to courage. At all events, as the brave man is with regard to what is terrible, so the rash man wishes to appear, and so he imitates him in situations where he can. Hence also, most of them are a mixture of rashness and cowardice, for while in these situations they display confidence, they do not hold their ground against what is really terrible. The man who exceeds in fear is a coward, for he fears both what he ought not and as he ought not, and all the similar characterizations attached to him. He is lacking also in confidence, but he is more conspicuous for his excess of fear in painful situations. The coward, then, is a despairing sort of person, for he fears everything. The brave man, on the other hand, has the opposite disposition, for confidence is the mark of a hopeful disposition. The coward, the rash man, and the brave man, then, are concerned with the same objects, but are differently disposed toward them, for the first two exceed and fall short, while the third holds the middle, which is the right position. And rash men are precipitate, and wish for dangers beforehand, but draw back when they are in them, while brave men are keen in the moment of action, but quiet beforehand. As we have said, then, courage is a mean with respect to things that inspire confidence or fear, in the circumstances that have been stated, and it chooses or endures things because it is noble to do so, or because it is base not to do so. But to die to escape from poverty or love or anything painful is not the mark of a brave man, but rather of a coward, for it is softness to fly from what is troublesome, and such a man endures death not because it is noble, but to fly from evil. After courage, let us speak of temperance. We have said that temperance is a mean with regard to pleasures, for it is less, and not in the same way, concerned with pains. Self-indulgence also is manifested in the same sphere. Now, therefore, let us determine with what sort of pleasures they are concerned. We may assume the distinction between bodily pleasures and those of the soul, such as love of honor and love of learning. For the lover of each of these delights in that of which he is a lover, the body being in no way affected, but rather the mind. But men who are concerned with such pleasures are called neither temperate nor self-indulgent. Nor again are those who are concerned with the other pleasures that are not bodily. For those who are fond of hearing and telling stories, and who spend their days on anything that turns up, are called gossips, but not self-indulgent, nor are those who are pained at the loss of money or of friends. Of the appetites, some seem to be common, others to be peculiar to individuals and acquired. For example, the appetite for food is natural, since everyone who is without it craves for food or drink, and sometimes for both, and for love also, as Homer says, if he is young and lusty. But not everyone craves for this or that kind of nourishment or love, nor for the same things. Hence such craving appears to be our very own. Yet it has, of course, something natural about it, for different things are pleasant to different kinds of people, and some things are more pleasant to everyone than chance objects. Now, in the natural appetites, few go wrong, and only in one direction, that of excess. For to eat or drink whatever offers itself till one is surfeited is to exceed the natural amount, since natural appetite is the replenishment of one's deficiency. Hence these people are called belly gods, this implying that they fill their belly beyond what is right. It is people of entirely slavish character that become like this. But with regard to the pleasures peculiar to individuals, many people go wrong, and in many ways. For while the people who are fond of so-and-so are so-called because they delight either in the wrong things, or more than most people do, or in the wrong way, the self-indulgent exceed in all three ways. They both delight in some things that they ought not to delight in, since they are hateful, and if one ought to delight in some of the things they delight in, they do so more than one ought, and than most men do. Plainly, then, excess with regard to pleasures is self-indulgence and is culpable. With regard to pains, one is not, as in the case of courage, called temperate for facing them, or self-indulgent for not doing so. But the self-indulgent man is so called because he is pained more than he ought at not getting pleasant things, even his pain being caused by pleasure. And the temperate man is so called because he is not pained at the absence of what is pleasant, and at his abstinence from it. The self-indulgent man, then, craves for all pleasant things, or those that are most pleasant, and is led by his appetite to choose these at the cost of everything else. Hence he is pained both when he fails to get them, and when he is merely craving for them, for appetite involves pain. But it seems absurd to be pained for the sake of pleasure. People who fall short with regard to pleasures and delight in them less than they should are hardly found, for such insensibility is not human. Even the other animals distinguish different kinds of food and enjoy some and not others, and if there is anyone who finds nothing pleasant and nothing more attractive than anything else, he must be something quite different from a man. This sort of person has not received a name because he hardly occurs. The temperate man occupies a middle position with regard to these objects, for he neither enjoys the things that the self-indulgent man enjoys most, but rather dislikes them, nor in general the things that he should not, nor anything of this sort to excess, nor does he feel pain or craving when they are absent, or does so only to a moderate degree, and not more than he should, nor when he should not, and so on. But the things that, being pleasant, make for health or for good condition, he will desire moderately and as he should, and also other pleasant things if they are not hindrance to these ends, or contrary to what is noble, or beyond his means. For he who neglects these conditions loves such pleasures more than they are worth. But the temperate man is not that sort of person, but the sort of person that the right rule prescribes. For in an irrational being the desire for pleasure is insatiable, even if it tries every source of gratification, and the exercise of appetite increases its innate force, and if appetites are strong and violent, they even expel the power of calculation. Hence they should be moderate and few, and should in no way oppose the rational principle. And this is what we call an obedient and chastened state. And as the child should live according to the direction of his tutor, so the appetitive element should live according to rational principle. Hence the appetitive element in a temperate man should harmonize with the rational principle, for the noble is the mark at which both aim, and the temperate man craves for the things he ought, as he ought, and when he ought, and this is what rational principle directs. Book 4. Let us speak next of liberality. It seems to be the mean with regard to wealth, for the liberal man is praised not in respect of military matters, nor of those in respect of which the temperate man is praised, nor of judicial decisions, but with regard to the giving and taking of wealth, and especially in respect of giving. Now by wealth we mean all the things whose value is measured by money. Further, prodigality and meanness are excesses and defects with regard to wealth. And meanness we always impute to those who care more than they ought for wealth. But we sometimes apply the word prodigality in a complex sense, for we call those men prodigals who are incontinent and spend money on self-indulgence. Hence also they are thought the poorest characters, for they combine more vices than one. Therefore the application of the word to them is not its proper use, for a prodigal means a man who has a single evil quality, that of wasting his substance, since a prodigal is one who is being ruined by his own fault, and the wasting of substance is thought to be a sort of ruining of oneself, life being held to depend on possession of substance. This, then, is the sense in which we take the word prodigality. Now the things that have a use may be used either well or badly, and riches is a useful thing, and everything is used best by the man who has the virtue concerned with it. Riches, therefore, will be used best by the man who has the virtue concerned with wealth, and this is the liberal man. Now, spending and giving seems to be the using of wealth, taking and keeping rather the possession of it. Hence, it is more the mark of the liberal man to give to the right people than to take from the right sources and not to take from the wrong. For it is more characteristic of virtue to do good than to have good done to one, and more characteristic to do what is noble than not to do what is base. And it is not hard to see that giving implies doing good and doing what is noble, and taking implies having good done to one or not acting basely. And gratitude is felt toward him who gives, not toward him who does not take, and praise also is bestowed more on him. It is easier also not to take than to give, for men are apter to give away their own too little than to take what is another's. Givers, too, are called liberal, but those who do not take are not praised for liberality, but rather for justice, while those who take are hardly praised at all. And the liberal are almost the most loved of all virtuous characters, since they are useful, and this depends on their giving. Now, virtuous actions are noble and done for the sake of the noble. Therefore, the liberal man, like other virtuous men, will give for the sake of the noble and rightly, for he will give to the right people, the right amounts, and at the right time, with all the other qualifications that accompany right giving, and that too with pleasure or without pain. For that which is virtuous is pleasant or free from pain, least of all will it be painful. But he who gives to the wrong people, or not for the sake of the noble, but for some other cause, will be called not liberal, but by some other name. But no more will the liberal man take from wrong sources, for such taking is not characteristic of the man who sets no store by wealth. Nor will he be a ready asker, for it is not characteristic of a man who confers benefits to accept them lightly. But he will take from the right sources, for example, from his own possessions, not as something noble, but as a necessity, that he may have something to give. Nor will he neglect his own property, since he wishes by means of this to help others. And he will refrain from giving to anybody and everybody, that he may have something to give to the right people, at the right time, and where it is noble to do so. It is highly characteristic of a liberal man also to go to excess in giving, so that he leaves too little for himself, for it is the nature of a liberal man not to look to himself. The term liberality is used relatively to a man's substance, for liberality resides not in the multitude of the gifts, but in the state of character of the giver, and this is relative to the giver's substance. There is therefore nothing to prevent the man who gives less from being the more liberal man, if he has less to give. Good temper is a means with respect to anger, the middle state being unnamed, and the extremes almost without a name as well. We place good temper in the middle position, though it inclines toward the deficiency, which is without a name. The excess might be called a sort of irascibility, for the passion is anger, while its causes are many and diverse. The man who is angry at the right things and with the right people, and further as he ought, when he ought, and as long as he ought, is praised. This will be the good-tempered man, then, since good temper is praised. For the good-tempered man tends to be unperturbed and not to be led by passion, but to be angry in the manner at the things and for the length of time that the rule dictates. But he is thought to err rather in the direction of deficiency, for the good-tempered man is not revengeful, but rather tends to make allowances. The deficiency, whether it is a sort of irascibility or whatever it is blamed. For those who are not angry at the things they should be angry at are thought to be fools, and so are those who are not angry in the right way, at the right time, or with the right persons. For such a man is thought not to feel things, nor to be pained by them, and since he does not get angry, he is thought unlikely to defend himself, and to endure being insulted and put up with insult to one's friends is slavish. The excess can be manifested in all the points that have been named, for one can be angry with the wrong persons at the wrong things more than is right, too quickly or too long. Yet all are not found in the same person. Indeed they could not, for evil destroys even itself, and if it is complete becomes unbearable. Now hot-tempered people get angry quickly and with the wrong persons and at the wrong things and more than is right, but their anger ceases quickly, which is the best point about them. This happens to them because they do not restrain their anger, but retaliate openly owing to their quickness of temper, and then their anger ceases.
Thank you for listening to this production of the Freedom and Virtue Institute. To offer feedback or suggestions for future episodes, please contact Kevin Schmiesing by email, kevin@fvinstitute.org.